Do you think of yourself as somebody with health anxiety or hypochondria? Have you wondered why it is that you cognitively know that there's probably nothing to worry about, yet you worry all the time? Have you found yourself researching and Googling when you know that actually this just produces more anxiety? If you said yes to any of the above, well, this episode is for you. We're going to talk about health anxiety today by request. This has come up a few times. Actually, when it came up the first time was a few months ago, and I thought this could be a good topic, but I don't know that I have much to add. But as I've been pondering this, I realized there's actually a lot I'd like to share on this topic. And of course, you know, this channel is all about insomnia, but there's a lot of overlap. So, you know, even if you have never identified yourself as having health anxiety, I think there's always lots to learn. And of course, if you have, and this is perfect for you. Now, before we go to our topic, I have one announcement, which is that tomorrow will be the last day that you can apply to become a sleep coach for this batch starting August 15th. And we're looking for somebody who understands our teaching, somebody who's a member of the community, somebody who has taken the path themselves, leaving insomnia, somebody who, you know, really wants to, you know, pay it forward. And especially if you have some type of niche, you know, like if there's an aspect of insomnia that you like to contribute to, like, you know, we have momsomnia, maybe parents with insomnia, or maybe you have a language that you know, that not so many people know, something like that would be especially valuable. But if you're interested to take that last spot we have available this batch, then head over to our website, follow the link up top, and you'll be good from there. All right, so with that said, before we start talking about health anxiety, as always, nothing here is medical advice. You know, of course, I'm not telling anybody here not to go to the doctor if they're worried about their health. If you're worried about your health, talk to your doctor. I think that especially, you know, pertinent in this episode, but also extra tricky because kind of what we're going to talk about is when we have like excessive worry about our health. But again, that of course still is always truth. When you worry about your health, talk about your doctor. That said, here are the outline of what we're going to talk about today. We're going to look at, you know, what is health anxiety? What is it really that we're afraid of when we have health anxiety? I think that can be really eye-opening. But then number two is going to be, why is it that oftentimes we know on a logical level that, there's probably nothing to be afraid of, but we're still afraid? Why are we aware but scared? And number three, why are we drawn to fire? Why is it that, you know, we just have to Google, we have to research, we have to go on that forum, but we know that that behavior actually fuels more anxiety? Why is that happening? And then number four, you know, we're going to take what we learned from points 1, 2, 3 and really apply them in number four. So I really think you're going to get the most out of this video if you don't try to skip to number four, but listen from the beginning to number four. And then finally, I'm going to share some of my views on why, you know, why there is a medical system and a mismatch, a medical system and reality mismatch. And I'll bring my point of view from many years of having worked as a doctor in the medical system. I put optional there because that last part, I don't think it's necessarily that important, but could be interesting. So anyways, let's start from the very beginning. What is health anxiety? As I often do, I pulled a definition from online. I think this is the NHS that says, health anxiety, sometimes called hypochondria, is when you spend so much time worrying you're ill or about getting ill that it starts taking over your life. The last part, take over your life, is not necessarily like, you know, it's not a strict definition, but I think it's, you know, it makes a lot of sense. When we worry so much that it starts taking a bigger and bigger part of our life and we realize this is kind of out of proportion, right? That's when, you know, I think we can call it health anxiety. You know, all of us can be like, oh, maybe I'm a little worried about this. Maybe I should check it out. I mean, that's, you know, just part of normal life, right? But yes, when it starts to really take over our life, then it's something bigger than that. And so I put it in, I just before recording this, I put in a little definition that's similar, but it's basically like when our health worries are out of proportion to the likelihood that we are ill. And now, when you just look at this, when you see this, like when we have a fear that is out of proportion to the likelihood that we are in some type of danger, what does that remind us of? what type of kind of entity does it ring a bell for you? Does this sound similar to something else, right? I'm looking for something. If you want, you can pause and ponder this for a second. But here's my view. In my opinion, this really sounds like we call a phobia. And I really think health anxiety can be viewed in a very favorable way, in a very helpful way, as a phobia. Because if you think of it, like, we can be afraid of flying, for example, when we know that flying is actually very safe, that doesn't mean that we cannot be very, very afraid of it. The fear is sort of out of proportion to the likelihood of us being in danger. We can be afraid of balloons, or we can be afraid of insects, you know, and it's, you know, it's a very, very similar mechanism. I think it can be really helpful to understand this, as we'll see as we will go along. And now here's something that, again, I think can be really eye-opening. When we have health anxiety, what exactly is it that we are afraid of? What is it we're afraid of? And you know, the answer can seem quite obvious. It can seem like, I'm so scared that I have a gut infection, or I'm so scared that I have, like, you know, latent tuberculosis. I don't know. Like, we can say, I'm scared of this, of course. Like, why are you asking this? This is so obvious that I'm afraid of. But I would say, no, I don't think actually that we're afraid of having that particular health issue, right? Because if that was the case, then the health anxiety would go away when we see that that's not it. You know, somebody's afraid of, like, I think I have, you know, Lyme disease, and all testing shows that there wasn't Lyme disease. Then, you know, if that was the only thing we were afraid of, then most likely that there wouldn't be anything more, like, that the anxiety would just resolve when we have that answer, right? I think actually that health anxiety can be very, you know, it can really help to view it as a phobia of uncertainty. What we're really, really, really afraid of is actually not one particular thing. It's uncertainty, where we have become afraid of not knowing, of the ambiguity, of ambivalence, of uncertainty, of just not being sure. And you can see that this, again, it becomes a real phobia situation when we see that, you know, anyone can face uncertainty, right? But when we face uncertainty and we see that, yeah, that's a real thing, you know, uncertainty can be real, and it can be, you know, it's not necessarily pleasant, but we don't really, you know, react to it more than that, then it becomes fleeting. Just like we can be a little bit scared of flying, but if we don't try to avoid flying, and, you know, we don't try to make ourselves, you know, make that fear go away or something like that, then it becomes fleeting. But when we start, like, being afraid of flying, and we start, like, I can't fly, what if I fly, how can I avoid flying, then that behavior of trying to, like, get away from the thing we fear, that actually makes us fear it more and more. So it can behave like that's how a phobia behaves. I think this is exactly how health anxiety behaves. And we're going to talk, you know, we're going to tie this together we're going to see how this is helpful, rather, when we go to point number four. But this is how I think we can really view health anxiety, as a phobia of uncertainty. Now, number two here, why are we often in a space where we're like, we understand that probably, like, actually, there's probably nothing here to really, like, that's really dangerous, but I'm still scared. Why does it happen? It can be expressed like this. I know this is health anxiety, but I'm still terrified. We have the knowledge, but we're still afraid. Well, here's the thing. I want to ask you a question. Have you ever watched a suspenseful movie for a second time, or maybe even a third time? You know, you probably have, or you can substitute for a book or whatever you want, but I'm using a movie in this analogy because I thought about that this the other day. Follow-up question, were you still sort of nervous, you know, sitting on the edge of your seat, like, you know, when you actually knew how the movie was going to end? You've seen it before, you know exactly what's going to happen, but were you still kind of feeling those tingles, like, were you still a little nervous, like, did you still get into it? Probably you did. That's at least that was happened to me when I rewatch a, you know, a thriller or a suspenseful movie. I still get nervous, right? And this shows us that even though we have, like, perfect knowledge, we know exactly what's going to happen, we still get nervous. Like, we understand on a logical level, but we still get, you know, our emotional system reacts, you know, it still reacts, right? And this just shows us that our amygdala, which is kind of like our safety center, I think the amygdala is maybe a little simplified, but you know, the amygdala, safety center, whatever we're going to call it, is not under the command of logic. You know, it reacts and behaves in a different way. We can also say we don't have access to like subconscious processes like those of this of the safety system, which is in itself a safety like safety thing, because if we had conscious control, if we could go in there and manipulate like our fears, that would be probably be quite dangerous. What if he said like, oh, I don't want to be scared of, you know, heights. I don't want to be scared of airplanes. I don't want to be scared of this. I don't want to be just change that. Pretty soon we're going to be in quite dangerous territory. So I think we are designed to not have, you know, direct control over these processes. But the point here is simply that if you find yourself like having this, I know there's nothing to be afraid of, or I know there's probably nothing to be afraid of, but I'm still really scared, and see that that's not strange or unusual at all. It is like all humans. If for all humans that happens, that is totally normal. And that can be so helpful. And we'll see more about why that's so helpful when we go to number four. All right, so number three, why are we drawn to fire? Why is it that even though we know this is going to make us really anxious, we still want to do it? This actually puzzled me for quite a long time. When I was maybe like a year into, you know, this channel and the work here, because so often there were followers that said, hey, Daniel, you know, I read this this article about how insomnia can cause all these things, you know, and I was kind of like, why is that? Because, you know, you know that insomnia is driven by fear and anxiety, yet you're seeking out these really, really alarming headlines, really triggering headlines, which makes you more like, why do you do that? And why do we do that? Because, you know, we all do it, right? Somebody says, for example, I read an article that insomnia can cause type 2 diabetes. And then it's like, why are you, know, this question comes up. Why are you reading this when you know that this will make you worried? And another, you know, similar question is, why are we constantly scanning, which happens with health anxiety? You know, we can notice, somebody can notice that, I'm paying attention to this, and now my, you know, my hand is tingling, you know, and my left foot feels weird, like I'm breathing fast, my pupil is bigger, like, and the person who's experienced this can also have like awareness that this is scanning. I'm just scanning for threats all the time, and you know, why are these things happen? Well, the thing is here, the thing is that when there is no real threat, the threat warning creates a sense that there is a threat we should monitor for, but. If you imagine that you are, or somebody is like an MMA fighter or a boxer or something like that, would that person benefit from knowing their opponent's every move, how they reacted, how they moved and everything? Of course they would, right? That would give them a great advantage because they could foresee that and they could improve their chances of winning and their own safety. So in other words, when we're faced with an actual, tangible, real threat, then threat monitoring, which this is called, makes total sense. And we can now see that when we, again, when we have the confusion, when we confuse a real tangible threat with a perceived untangible threat like uncertainty, then it makes total sense why we're threat monitoring. You know, we understand that, aha, this is why threat monitoring is happening. It's just it's exactly what the brain is designed to do. There's just a confusion whether there is a tangible threat or an intangible or like perceived threat, okay? So now we've seen these, we've talked about these three points, and now we're gonna put them together in a way that I hope makes a lot of sense. And I call them A, B, and C here. So how to leave health anxiety? A, understand that it behaves like any other phobia. And I think this is perhaps the most helpful part we're going to go to right now. Seeing that, okay, we have become afraid of uncertainty, you know, which can happen to all of us. Like, you know, we can a balloon can pop and we can start becoming a little afraid of balloons. Like that step is quite kind of expected, right? It's what happens next that really matters. So we can see that, you know, we can become a little bit afraid of uncertainty for any reason, but it is when we seek more certainty and the more we try to avoid that the thing we fear, the more we try to avoid uncertainty, the more we try to get away from it, the more the brain thinks, oh, you really don't want uncertainty. Uncertainty must be really bad. Uncertainty is a danger. Uncertainty is a threat. Oh, we really don't want uncertainty. Then uncertainty seems even more like a threat, right? And the more uncertainty seems like a threat, the more we're gonna want certainty, the more we're gonna, you know, pursue certainty. And then this, now becomes a self-perpetuating cycle, just like insomnia, just like other phobias. And, you know, now a follow-up question before we see how we can meet this, the follow-up question can often be like, but how can I be 100% sure that there's nothing wrong with my health? You know, and again, nothing here is medical advice. Always talk to your doctor when you're worried about your health. But who can actually be 100% sure that there's nothing wrong with their health? Like, what human being can be 100% sure? Nobody can. Nobody can. I don't know. You don't know. Nobody actually knows this with certainty. But a lot of us live with this, live with some uncertainty. And uncertainty, again, isn't dangerous. Uncertainty is just part of the human experience. So when we've seen this, then we can see that, okay, just like any phobia, what actually helps is kind of exposing ourselves to what we are afraid of. Exposure therapy is known to actually be very helpful for phobias. So when we see this, we can see that, aha, what will lead me to not be so scared of uncertainty is actually being willing to face uncertainty. Because that's when the brain sees that uncertainty is actually not a real danger, it's not a real threat. It cannot actually harm me. Uncertainty is normal. It's nothing that's dangerous in any way. And that this doesn't, of course, this doesn't mean like, okay, I have to, before I just add this one, uncertainty cannot harm us. And going towards willingness to experience health anxiety leads to less and less health anxiety. So what does that mean in practical reality? Well, it's not like we have to manufacture uncertainty. Okay, I have to create some uncertainty now so I can expose myself to it. No, probably if you're watching this, you know, you're experiencing uncertainty as a threat. You're afraid of uncertainty. So anytime you see that, aha, this is the fear of uncertainty, then we can just take note of that and be willing to be uncertain without taking any action to get away from the uncertainty, you know, in that moment. So in another way to put this, in sort of the lingo we use here on the channel, is befriending health anxiety. Or I should have put this the other way. I'm gonna change this. I'm changing it right away because that was not what I'm gonna say. Befriending uncertainty. I can't spell. It's gonna be done in a second. There we go. This is what I meant to say. Befriending uncertainty, much better put. So yes, we'll conclude A there. And I think this can be really, really helpful. Now, B, see that it's normal to have quote unquote irrational fear. When we use the word irrational, it's sort of a little bit like judgy to say that this is too much, you know. I do say, like, on the flip side, I do say like out of proportion, because I think that is more neutral. But anyway, irrational is a little judgy, I think, which goes to the second thing here, which is that when we judge our emotions, we are in a struggle. We think, I shouldn't be this scared. Why am I this scared? I know there's nothing wrong. What's wrong with me, right? Now we're in a struggle, right? Now we're trying to fight our own emotions, right? And the more we try to push away emotions, the stronger they become. We know that. On the other hand, when we deploy self-understanding and self-kindness, then there's peace. When we're like, I'm super scared, although I know there's probably nothing to worry about, and that's okay. That's just like any other human. That's fine. Now there is peace, okay? That was B. I hope that can help as well. And C, allow threat monitoring without judgment. It's tricky because, yes, we can see that if I tend to worry about something and I'm constantly Googling it or researching it, then that fuels it. But then on the flip side, when we're like, okay, I'm going to force myself to stop this, then again, there's struggle. So when you see that Googling is probably not the best for me, but I'm still doing it, then we don't have to forcefully try to control this impulse, and we don't have to judge ourselves again. We can just be like, okay, this is happening. And we can say, aha, this is that threat monitoring that the brain thinks will keep me safe. Aha. And when we deploy this awareness, we're automatically outside of the struggle. We're just learning about ourselves. And that automatically leads to more and more peace. So this will really conclude the, you know, health anxiety, how to meet this part. But I think you may want to stick around, because now I'm going to share my thoughts on, you know, the medical system and this mismatch with the reality. And I want to start here by asking or say, or kind of commenting on this first sentence here, what the medical system was designed for. I think really the medical system was designed for these well-defined, tangible conditions like tuberculosis and syphilis, and hemorrhoids, and a broken bone. Like that's what it was designed for, right? And this is, medical education still to this day, I think, is very similar to what it was 20 years ago, 40 years ago, 60 years ago. You know, there's obviously, new knowledge, but the idea is still, okay, find the problem, fix the problem. That's still, the idea. And, we're in a reality where that's not so much what's happening. So now we're gonna talk about what the medical system was not designed for. The medical system was not designed for these like internal self-sustaining struggles, these more like spiritual things that's going on so much in the world. And this extends far beyond what meets the eye, meaning let's say a person is quite overweight and they need a knee replacement. That can seem like, okay, this is exactly what the medical system was designed for. Maybe not. Because we can see that the reason this person is overweight is actually because they were using food as a way to escape uncomfortable emotions like being bored or being sad or being anxious. This is more of a spiritual problem. This is an inner struggle that led to that. Or anything that comes from any health issues that come from, let's say, smoking. When smoking was a way to escape emotions or try to achieve an emotion, that's also like an inner struggle, right? And of course, we have, all of that, what I think of as like mental unwellness, like feeling like very, very sad, feeling anxious all the time, having insomnia. I think of those, again, nothing medical does here, just me sharing my thoughts. I think of those as more like internal struggles that the medical system was not designed for, because the medical system is like, okay, this is a neurotransmitter problem. You have too little of this. We're going to give you that. And it works on a completely different level than what really, really is going to help. So I think we have a huge disconnect here where, I've heard this number 80% several times, like people say 80% of what shows up in a doctor's office is actually more of something that comes from an internal struggle than a kind of clearly defined like a medical thing. And I think that that could very well be true. It could very well be true. It could be even more. So I think there's a huge, huge disconnect there. And we can look at this in two perspectives. Now, the patient and the doctor perspective. And from a patient perspective, when you show up with one of these more like an internal struggle type thing, it can be very frustrating because you feel like you're not getting through. The doctor you're talking to isn't really fully listening or understanding or like connecting with you. And you can feel like you get a runaround or you just get a medication. Okay, here, try this. And then you're kind of like sent off. And you can also feel like you get sent into this like kind of like medical roller coaster where people are just like, I don't know what this is, but you should talk to these four specialists. And those four specialists are kind of like doing all kinds of tests and like examinations. And they're like, I don't know what it is, but you can talk to this specialist or we should do some more tests. And again, not medical advice here, but that can definitely be the experience that you feel not heard, not listened to, and not understood. And from a doctor perspective, it can be very frustrating also, I've had so many times when I was still practicing as a doctor, when I had patients who had, clearly had like insomnia type symptoms, but they also were snoring, let's say. And I would be like, I really think this person would benefit from kind of like self-exploration, like learning about insomnia, education. And so then I'd be in this position where this patient was referred to me because somebody was afraid they had obstructive sleep apnea, right? So how I'd meet this was just educate about both obstructive sleep apnea and insomnia and say, well, this is patient-centered care. We can either, we can do some education around insomnia, some learning and see where that takes us and how you feel, or we could do a sleep study to make sure there's nothing we're missing. And out of that, I must have done that like more than 100 times, and I never have had anyone say, I want to do some education and like introspection. Everybody's like, I want a sleep study, which of course is natural because that's what they were referred for. That's what they were told might be going on, and et cetera, et cetera. But but I often felt the sense of like, oh, dang, I think you'd really benefit more from something else. But what can we do? We are in the system, right? And I think this plays out millions of times all over the world all the time, meaning like I have so many friends, colleagues that are in the medical system, and they're so often sharing like, oh my gosh, you know, today, like everyone I saw today really had these, like they had some type of anxiety or some other internal struggle. But what can they do? They came to the doctor, so the doctor feels obligated to do testing and to really look at this as a kind of like traditional medical problem. So doctors feel like they have no choice. They have to do all this testing. They have to order stuff. They have to refer, because like that's what they were trained for. They were trained not to miss some exotic thing or not to miss anything. And they play, you know, it's also safety thing and liability things, and all this plays a role in this mismatch. But my point here is just that I think both, you know, from a patient perspective, from somebody who's seeking help and somebody who's there to provide help, the mismatch is felt very much on both sides, very frustrating for a lot of people who are involved here. So finally here, you know, what's the future? What's the solution? Well, I don't know the details, but I believe in us. I believe that we humans will see this. We will see this very clearly one day, and we will figure this one out too, like we always do. So I will conclude there. Let me know in the comments what you thought. I hope this made a lot of sense to you. And if you are finding your way past worries and to a place where you're sleeping well and leaving insomnia behind, thanks to, you know, tuning in here to the free content and putting the pieces together in the puzzle, that is wonderful. And let us know. Please share how things are going. But if you find that it is not so clear, you know, there are a lot of pieces to the puzzle, you would like to have some guidance and some help, you know, contextualizing what you're going through into our teaching, our NATO ways, then please head over to thesleepcrystal.com and look at our coaching options. If you decide to join, I will look forward to seeing you on the other side. With that said, thanks for today. Thanks for being here, and look forward to seeing you tomorrow. Bye-bye.